This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
Golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore, and we will be launching our second Origins outline, looking at the deployment and use of the cloaking device from its initial debut and Balance of Terror through The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine.
This is a very interesting subject to me for a few reasons. Its use is clever and adds a huge tactical advantage to those who have it. And the reason it is not used by the Federation into the Borg threat when the Dominion War happens is equally interesting.
Yeah, so let's walk down a timeline here. In the original series, we got our first look at this technology in Balance of Terror. And then when the Federation felt it was a game-changing threat, stole that cloaking device in the Enterprise incident.
Yeah, so let's do that, Zach. So in the Balance of Terror, we know that it was largely based off the movie Enemy Below. And it was a submarine warfare plot line, right, where they needed the ship to have a way to become invisible and kind of have that tension between the two. And they came up with the cloaking device or the bending of light. And the Romulans, to this point, were the only race that we know of that had this technology. And I thought it was used quite wonderfully because the Federation was dealing with this for the very first time, if I remember correctly.
As of Balance of Terror, this was a new technology that the Federation had not encountered before, and they talk about the Romulan Wars from about 100 years before, and obviously back then, there was no visual technology, so there wasn't that, and there wasn't cloaking technology then either. So this is something the Romulans have, you know, they have a tendency to do this, and as we go through our conversation, we'll talk about this, but they have a tendency to just kind of withdraw from the rest of the galaxy for large amounts of time, and between when they last encountered them, and in the Romulan War, Earth-Romulan War, and Balance of Terror, they developed this cloaking technology. And it's a pretty cool technology for sure. I mean, there's a huge tactical advantage, as you said, because when you can sneak up on an enemy and do a sneak attack and then disappear again, which is what they were doing with all the outposts, I mean, they can just get away with it scot-free unless you develop a technology to detect it, or at least know what to look for. Because I think the initial problem was, in this episode, the Enterprise didn't even know what they were looking for with the Romulans.
That's right. They could detect something on motion sensors, as they said.
The motion sensor,
but,
yeah.
The motion sensor. But if the ship was still, if it wasn't moving, from what I gather, they wouldn't be able to see it. And there was, you know, a slight flux, I guess, in the bending of the light that we kind of get onto as time moves on. But in the Balance of Terror, and even including the Enterprise incident, when the Enterprise just goes right into Romulan space, it is surrounded before they knew those ships were there. So it was a very, very advanced piece of technology for their day, and huge, 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 like I said, advantage. The only way the Enterprise in Balance of Terror was successful was deploying tactics and, you know, trying to outmaneuver, because they kind of knew where the ship was heading. If that ship was going in a different direction or trying to get deeper into the Federation or whatnot, I don't think they would have had much luck trying to find it.
Right, it was a very unique set of circumstances that allowed the Enterprise to find and eventually defeat the Romulan Bird of Prey. But we mentioned the Enterprise incident, and I think there was a clear evolution in the technology between Bird of Prey and the Enterprise incident. For one, it's a very limited vessel, a small vessel. Its objective was to sneak itself into a target area, destroy that target, and then sneak back to its home base. You know, just a one mission kind of ship. And then when we see them again in the Enterprise incident, these have, of course, have been converted Klingon battlecruisers, which we've talked about several times here. So
that's right.
Standard over. That's one of our favorite subjects. It's these ships going back and forth. But they've converted this cloaking technology to a Klingon ship. And as you said, Ken, they appear out of nowhere. And it seems to be just a more sophisticated version of the cloaking device. And somewhere along the way, Starfleet Federation got wind of this new technology, because they almost act like it's new. Like, they don't really reference Balance of Terror and Enterprise Incident. They're like, oh, this is some kind of invisibility. Like, okay, you know, the original series is infamous for its lack of referencing to earlier episodes. And this is one of those cases. And like, if this was in a later Star Trek, you would assume they would say, oh, it is similar to what we encountered along the neutral zone, but it has been advanced. They didn't say that. It's implied, but nobody really said that. And that's fine. But the reason why, you know, the Enterprise and Kirk specifically has gotten this mission to go in and get the cloaking device is because it's the next evolution of the cloaking device, and is therefore represents a much greater danger to Starfleet and the Federation.
Right, it changes the balance of power in the galaxy, or the Alpha Quadrant, as I guess it becomes known later on. But it does. It is a game changer. And in order to keep balance and to keep that mutual threat alive, you can't have one enemy have, you know, an enormous advantage over another, especially one as dangerous as the Romulans, which, you know, was interesting to me that the focus here was doing something rather sneaky, right? There was no mention of Section 31, nothing like this. It hadn't been invented at this time when the writers were around. They just came up with a pretty clever plot line, really, to get the Federation off the hook, get this technology, which they, you know, somehow, some way, because when they did capture the actual cloaking device and you saw what was encompassed in that very highly sophisticated nomad-like device, getting that hooked up to the shields, I give them a lot of credit. And, it was a pretty cool episode in that they knew that if they didn't have this, then the threat from the Romulans would only grow. And even if they didn't deploy it, they could reverse engineer it in a sense, maybe, to figure out how to detect it.
Mm-hmm. That was my kind of take on what Starfleet would have done with it. Obviously, they didn't incorporate them in their ships, which perhaps they should have, but we can get to that conversation in a minute.
I've brought this up a couple of times when we were talking about the starships, and I know for a fact that the refit Enterprise had a cloaking device. It was in those blueprints. So I think there was a timeline when they did actually do it. Now, there's nothing referenced to books or whatever, and I just reordered Mr. Scott's Guide to the Enterprise, that old book about the refit in the Enterprise. I'm going to find it in there. I know I am. I'm determined. So I think what might have happened is they had it, but it could be deployed if they needed to. Because there was certainly nothing that kept them from doing it. It isn't brought up, that's for sure. But we really don't encounter, after the Enterprise incident, and I don't recall in the animated series using it or having to deploy weapons against a cloaking device. Honestly, I don't think we see it again until Star Trek III.
Yes, I believe in the maybe Kobayashi Maru, do the Klingons decloak or... No, because the Klingons didn't have.
No, but that would make sense.
Yeah,
that would make sense in the Kobayashi Maru. But there's nothing that they just say, you know, three are inbound or something.
Let's go on a slight tangent here about once again.
Okay,
our favorite, one of my favorite, clearly thing to talk about is these Klingon Romulan ships, right? So the Kobayashi Maru, there's a ship that's lost in the neutral zone, right? But it's the Klingon neutral
zone. It has drifted into the neutral
zone. We have Klingon neutral zone now. I know we had a Romulan neutral zone. And then it's like an orb. It's not like a line, like the Romulan neutral zone, which makes sense. Two territories. Like the graphic they show us in Wrath of Khan is like this three-dimensional oval, which is odd, right? They could have just said, they could have used the same excuse they used in the Enterprise incident. Like, oh, the Romulans are using the Klingon design because they wanted to use the stock footage from the motion picture with the Klingon Katinga class cruisers, and they could have just said that again, and then, you know, the Romulans blow them up or whatever, and then they would have just said, oh, Mr. Savick, the Romulans don't take prisoners, right? And that would have made perfect sense, because the Romulans don't take prisoners the Klingons are the ones who take prisoners. So I don't know. To me, that was just a thing that like it always made more sense if you would have thought of if we're gonna do the Kobayashi Maru, it would have been Romulans, not Klingons. But there's a tangent. Let's get back to what we were talking about.
Now back to our program. I think though you make a good point, Zach. You really do. It does get a little. I guess back and forth, but you know, because of the Enterprise incident, the whole thing is opened up,
right? True.
Because we know that they have an alliance, at least in this timeline, and they're sharing technology. So you know, who knows why? By the time you know 20 years has passed, or 2.5 years for the motion picture, and then I guess 20 years till Wrath of Khan, or something like this. Where are you, Mr. Atos, when I need you? There could have been a Klingon neutral zone, and they do talk about that again in Star Trek VI, mm-hmm. that there is a neutral zone between the two.
Yeah, well, for the new cloaking device, you know, I guess maybe it was just my interpretation or the way it evolved, but I really do feel like that for whatever reason that this one was more advanced than the one in Balance of Terror. Like I feel like these battle cruisers could fly through a comet and you wouldn't see them, you know, like what happened in Balance of Terror. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe. I mean, if you think about it, and you think about today's stealth technology, all stealth does really is absorbs radar waves, right? It doesn't allow the signal to bounce back. And what this does is it bends light, right, around the ship so that it looks like kind of a hole in space. I think that's the way it's described. So how it works on the sensors, I guess, is similar. Either a signal doesn't return back to to the Federation ships that are able to detect it, or it just simply reflects off and away, right? It might show us some kind of small blip, just like stealth works actually today. You can still catch it on radar, but it puts out such a small signal that it's tough to determine what it is. So as far as a ship passing through a bunch of space dust or whatever, since there's no air to move that dust, but something physically would be moving through it, you might be able to see it just because, you know, it'd be pushed away just like a boat wake would on a lake type of thing.
Right. You know? Well, I guess my point is I feel like the Balance of Terror cloaking device was as, you know, technically close to something believable, like hard science fiction as possible, right? They use the concepts of the stealth fighters and things like that, sonar detection, and they apply that just, you know, they transcribe that to a future combat. But then when we get to Enterprise incident and pretty much all cloaking devices moving forward, it's more like space fantasy at that point. It's like, yeah, let's push a button and now we're invisible to everything. You know, they didn't really think about the nitty gritty there. So,
well, what was interesting, and I think that's a good point, because one of the things we never really get our arms around too well is how ships that have deployed the cloaking device stay in touch with each other, know what formations they're in, all that other stuff. Because at the end of the Enterprise incident, the Romulans couldn't locate the Enterprise, right? They couldn't use what they've learned from their old technology to detect it. So I guess you're right. It does make it, quote unquote, invisible, which I don't think that's the point, but that's what happened.
Right. And hey, all credit to Scotty. He truly is a miracle worker. What, he had like 15 minutes to install the cloaking device on the Enterprise and Enterprise incident? I mean, that's crazy. That's mm-hmm. like, you can't even get an iPhone to communicate with a PC correctly, you know? And you get Scotty gets handed this alien piece of technology. He's like, Scotty, you have 15 minutes, so we're all dead. It's like, come on, man. So this episode, more than the other, I was most impressed with Scotty's engineering technique. I'm like, where do you even plug that thing in, right? I mean, he's just working on a console. I mean, it's crazy, you know?
Yeah, and the one giveaway was that it was being used on not the deflector shields, but these shields, correct? If that's what I remember right. So it goes into the same, whatever generates the shields, this technology also generates that ability to refract light into the shields or around the shields. So
yeah, and it was always my interpretation, and this is just what I took from the shows, that the cloaking device was like a bubble, much like, you know, the shield bubble you see around ships later on, because that makes more sense than, like, you know, it's projecting a equally distributed, you know, shield, you know, around the ship. So when the way I see a ship cloaking is, obviously the visual interpretations are different for every series and movie, but, you know, we see it, quote unquote, disappear, but it just projects this sphere of radio silence around the ships. And that's how I envision the cloaking device operating. So
mm-hmm. I think we're aligned there. So if we leave the television shows, and I think we take a look into the animated series. I don't recall anything. I'm sure Aaron will let us know if we've missed something here. And then we move forward all the way to Star Trek III. That's the next time we see anything involving a cloaking device, and we find it again on a Klingon warship, which is pretty sophisticated in of itself. I mean, it's incredible. You can land the thing on planet Earth and not even see it. So it's even though you can see it when you're in outer space, because you see like this little, I don't know, like this little black hole moving against the silhouette of a planet. You can't see it if it's a foot in front of you when you're in a park in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's the continued evolution, I think, of the visual representation. Because, yeah, in Star Trek III, this was the new cloaking device, right? And you see like the almost like a mirage-looking, you know, wave of lights across like the stars, as if like a true stealth, like that is less magic and more scientific. Like, I can buy that if we had a cloaking device in real life, it would look like, you know, it's reflecting back what's behind it, you know, and all that, and that's why you'd see it that way. Star Trek IV, it's like, yeah, that's just magic, right? You just put your invisibility cloak on, and now we can't see you, right?
Yeah, that's right. It did the same thing as Balance and Terror to the Enterprise incident. It's the same thing from Star Trek III to Star Trek IV. It allowed you to tell the story differently and magnificently, really, if you think about it, you know, as to how they could do what they were doing. And so it was brilliant in that context. I think the, like I said, the appearance of the Bird of Prey at the beginning of Star Trek III was pretty awesome, right? I mean, I think people are like, oh, this is cool. They've added an element that we have not seen in any other science fiction show. The original series show, absolutely. But up to this point, we haven't seen cloak technology or anything like that in Star Wars or any of those movie franchises. They up the game a little bit in Star Trek III.
The cloaking device truly is a unique to Star Trek technology. Yes, they mention a cloaking device in The Empire Strikes Back, and that's it. You know, I can't think of any other space franchise that has cloaking devices like this. I mean, obviously, Battlestar Galactica is a lot more grounded. There's really not that many other, you know, true, I mean, there's a lot of science fiction franchises, but like science fiction franchises that take place primarily in space. I mean, Alien comes to mind, but they're a lot more grounded as well. So yeah, I mean, Star Trek all the way as far as cloaking devices go.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that the use of tractor beams and things like that have kind of permeated all of them. I don't know who was first. I don't know if there was a movie or a show before Star Trek that used it. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are used very common in Star Trek that found their way into other shows and things like that, which I think is pretty neat. But the cloaking device pretty much stands alone. It really was a brilliant idea across many lines, if you think about it, because it really allows you, when you have all these different series and shows, and as we advance past our Star Trek movies here, the use of the cloaking device is, you know, it's as a plot point becomes far more common, and it really shows what an advantage it is to have it, right? More than to not have it.
Right. Well, even, you know, Star Trek VI is the ultimate evolution of the cloaking device, because up until then, you have to decloak to fire. Right. And and to me, I like that. We get more and more magical as this for cloaking devices progresses, right? Because obviously, Balance of Terror is established that it takes so much energy for the Bird of Prey to fire. It has to decloak. It can't have so much energy going on to hide itself and fire at the same time. And then we can assume that's the case in, you know, the Enterprise incident that never really comes up then. But then, you know, we get to Star Trek III and they speculate, like, I'm just going to guess that they have to uncloak to fire. Like, well, I hope so. Like Bone says, may all your guesses be right. You know, and they're right. So
yeah.
And that is the rule for the Klingons for 3, 4, 5, you know, because we see the cloaking device at work again in Star Trek V. And then Star Trek VI, we have this ultimate weapon in the Bird of Prey that can fire when it's cloaked. And who knows how they came up with that, right? I assume that's a one-off prototype, because we don't see that again for, gosh, let's think about it. I don't think we ever encountered another ship that can fire when cloaked in Star Trek, do we, Ken?
Not that I recall. I remember that the Defiant decloaks. Everything seems to decloak before they shoot, which, I have to be honest with you, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think
really?
you said, no, it doesn't. I know what you were saying about the Balance of Terror, that the Romulan ship had this unbelievable plasma-based weapon, right? This thing was just ripping apart asteroids, and if it hit the Enterprise, if it actually hit it at full force, it would have destroyed the ship. So they use every ounce of power to generate and fire this thing. When you talk about normal weapons that you're, you know, that you're shooting out of torpedo tubes or your disruptors or whatever, it's not like this be-all, end-all, you know, I'll switch to Star Blazers here, you know, wave motion gun, where every ounce of power in the ship is being generated, you know, to shoot this thing, like the Enterprise D at the conclusion of Best of Both Worlds Part One.
The deflector
right?
It was, dish, gotcha.
Right,
yeah.
It was drained of everything. They threw everything into the kitchen sink to thrust all this energy, and the ship's dead. So I get that concept, and I get it from the point of view of that little Romulan warbird, but I don't get it from anything else. The other thing is, too, is just like in submarine warfare, if you shoot, right, and you don't kill your enemy with those shots, the second you do, your location is known, right? I mean, technology today instantly triangulates all kinds of things. So in the Star Trek universe, which it's funny how we have all this advanced technology, but we don't have a lot of the systems and the abilities that we have in real life today when it comes to that kind of stuff. And for the points of telling the story, I get it. But like I said, as soon as that ship fires, before, I'm saying, you know, a tenth of a nanosecond, your weapons firing systems would be able to lock on and aim at the source, right, and shoot automatically.
Well, I see your point about the submarine, because obviously underwater and propulsion and you know, the way submarines are, they can't you know, speed away to another area. Right. But for a spaceship, you know, my fanboy justification answer to your problem there is, you know, you can fire real quick and then just move really quick, full thrusters, full impulse, you know, and it screws up the tracking. So, I mean, obviously it's a lot more, a spaceship is a lot more maneuverable than a submarine.
Oh yeah, I grant you that. But I'm just saying with technology, you know, you could lay down a pattern, you know, across an area, and you'd probably get pretty close, which is exactly what happened in the Balance of Terror, right? It was just like depth charges. They were firing towards where, you know, the ship was last sighted, or where the motion picture, you know, so sonar, quote unquote, had picked it up. So they were able to get a lock on. So if you're firing and you know, there's you know, that second it's locked on and you figure the distance involved, they'd be able to at least fire pretty close to get it. Because the way they killed General Chang, you know, was through being able to detect gas.
The right? Tailpipe, yeah.
Yeah, which, if you think about it, is no more ridiculous than be able to lock on the second it shoots. You know, you know, so there's a couple of ways to skin that cat. And again, like I said, for storytelling purposes, you suspend disbelief and you have a good time, and the Enterprise is getting blown to bits, which, you know, I'm grabbing the side of the movie theater chairs and, you know, ready to rip them up because they're blowing up my ship again. But it's effective. But why it can't shoot going forward absolutely makes no sense. There was nothing said in Star Trek VI like the draw of energy was too much, or it couldn't function, because I'll tell you, it worked great when it shot its own sister ship, and it worked great when it was shooting the Enterprise pretty good. I mean, they couldn't even get a trajectory on that thing. So it is great technology.
Well, I can only assume that somehow the cloaking technology is tied into the weapon system. Much like, you know, if I can buy that Star Trek The Motion Picture, the warp drive is tied into the phasers, right? They're like the phasers channel through the warp drive and all that. I can buy that the weapon systems on a bird of prey are channeled through, you know, the cloaking device on the bird of prey are channeled through the weapon systems or something. So there's always a way to justify it, Cam. But I do see your point, because if firing a torpedo, right, the only thing that the ship is doing is launching the torpedo. All the explosive technology is on the individual torpedo. You just launch that thing out, and that's it. Right, I mean, phasers I can buy, because, you know, phasers, the energy is coming straight from the ship, right? But you could just, you know, as long as your launching system, I mean, can you launch a probe, right, while you're cloaked? If you can launch a probe while you're cloaked, you can launch a torpedo, right? This cloaking device is unraveling more.
Yep.
More, but hey, it gets more magical, so it's easy to poke holes through. They never went too far with it, though, and I'm glad they never went back to that, because that would have just felt tired. Like, oh, okay, doing that again, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like I said, it's fun to play with these things. I understand the reasons why they do things, and it's entertainment value has to be there. It is funny though that you will see people defend to the death, you know, things that have no continuity, and try to build bridges and pull the whole things together, and it's literally impossible to do it. But people will fight, you know, in arguments about Star Trek to make that happen. So I sometimes enjoy trying to understand the logic, and the logic is it fits the plot. It has nothing to do with what happened in Star Trek 3, you know, what happens in Star Trek 4 builds off Star Trek 3, what happens in Star Trek 6 builds off 4 and 3. It makes perfect sense. You know, the technology be damned. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. I mean, Star Trek has more, I think, continuity and accuracy and technology bridges than any other science fiction show. And, you know, they've been a number of series and all the different seasons that they've put together. They've done a hell of a job. Right.
Yeah, it's fun to point out the inconsistencies, but if you really look at like the grand scheme of things, like we're talking like 15% max things that don't fit together, but the other 85% do. I mean, that's very impressive. So
it is impressive. You know. So, you know, and I always point that out to the Star Wars fans, because I'm a big Star Wars fan too. But even with The Force Awakens, I was laughing at the fact that no one can seem to track a ship, right? It's on them before you know it. It's at the planet before you know it. No one sees them coming every time. It's amazing to me. So they have all this technology, but they don't have any semblance of what you would call radar. I don't know why, but it is kind of funny that way. All right, Zach. So now we're departing TOS space into TNG space. Kind of feels funny being over here on the other side of the line, doesn't it?
So yeah, we're here in TNG, and the first instance that we see of the cloaking device in TNG is in the season one season finale, The Neutral Zone, which is appropriately titled The Neutral Zone because we deal with the Romulans. We see them for the first time in, I believe it was 50 years or so. They said the Romulans had gone, you know, as we said, they go on these big hiatuses from dealing with other species. They kind of just close off their borders and get all, and I believe they are kind of xenophobic. That's a big motivation for them. They're always suspicious of other races and don't trust them, and you know, they're probably so suspicious of other races because they're conniving themselves, and they're probably one of the most conniving races in Star Trek. So they assume the worst out of everyone. Mm-hmm. So they've been clearly just in their own borders working on technology, and we get our first look at the Romulan Warbird, which is an awesome ship, and it decloaks in front of the Enterprise D, and it has the coolest sound effect for all the cloaking devices. It's like the most iconic, like, I can't even do it.
Yeah,
but
don't even try.
I'm not even
it
gonna
is
try.
Hard, yeah. It is hard. Well, first, the Warbird looks outstanding. I couldn't believe how big the thing was. You know, I always was arguing with myself, is it bigger than the Enterprise? Is it not? Because back then we didn't really have much guides, but it certainly looked, and it turns out it was much, much bigger. So you know that the technology has increased tenfold. There's no indication that it can shoot well cloaked, because in unification, the ship's decloaked to kill the 3,000 soldiers that were going to invade all of Vulcan. And
what a great plan. Way to go, Sela.
good plan. But anyway, yeah, so in every case that I see, that I remember the Romulan shooting, they do it uncloaked, except in Nemesis, when Shizan's ship,
the Scimitar,
that does seem to shoot quite a bit while it's cloaked.
It does? Oh, man. Mm-hmm. See, I've tried to block out Nemesis from my memory. That's why I forget, because it's not a good movie. Sorry, it's just that's just my opinion.
Careful now. You're in someone else's territory. I keep looking around, seeing if anybody's coming from TNG cloaking technology is much better than the TOS cloaking technology. So be careful now. You know.
That's right. Are you sure the Scimitar can fire when it's cloaked?
Am I sure? No. I just remember that during the battle, when they're zooming around that nebula or whatever they're in,
mm-hmm. The Mutara Nebula. Oh wait, no.
Yes. When they're in that nebula, it seems to me like the Enterprise takes quite a few hits of its own, and they decloaked like one section of the ship to lure in a couple of warbirds, and then you know, to make it look like it was damaged. And then when the ships went by, it was firing. But I don't remember the whole ship becoming decloaked to shoot.
And I was just giving Star Trek credit for not going back to that well. I mean, what? And the reason I'm like Nemesis is it's just a tired retread of everything we've seen before. We're not here to talk about that. But all I'm going to say is like if that is true, if they really can fire when it's cloaked, because I haven't seen Nemesis in years because I have no desire to. Wow. Way to rip off another previous film in your film, guys. The big enemy ship can fire when it's cloaked. Ugh. But moving on to the other other cloaking devices in TNG, we see the Romulans use it, we see the Klingons use it. I did find that, you know, there needs to be some kind of just talking about, I'm thinking of all the times we've seen Romulan ships cloak and decloak in TNG. You know, in the episode The Mind's Eye, when Geordi's like on his shuttle going to Risa, and he's sitting there like he's got his back to the window and he's just playing the computer game, you know, like, you know, animal, vegetable, mineral, or whatever he's playing, and the ship decloaks right in front of him, and he just happens to turn around and see it. He's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!" Is there not like a proximity alert on these ships, right? To notice when a enemy vessel has decloaked, like within visual range, which has got to be pretty close, you'd think, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I will say that was a great moment. You know, it was one of those things you didn't expect it, and there it is. But I will tell you this, that tells you again just how incredible that technology is, because as far as we know, they're deep in Federation space and they don't care, right? So what's to keep them from orbiting Earth when they want and just start laying down all kinds of weaponry? And that's my kind of my issue with the one, the ability of cloak technology is incredible, but how silly it is that the Federation, and this is where it gets established really holistically, right, that the Federation just doesn't play in this playground, because they steal it in the original series so that they could have it, and then in the Next Generation, you know, there's this Treaty of Algernon. Is that how it's pronounced? Algernon?
Yeah, Treaty of Algernon.
Treaty of Algernon.
It's like flowers for Algernon.
Yeah,
right?
That keep them from developing this technology, which is ridiculous in concept. I mean, it's wholly ridiculous. Whether or not it kept the peace for 60 years or not, it's you know, you're essentially signing a waiver that says we won't do this and you'll do that with somebody who has absolutely no credibility, and it's just an amazing thing. But at any rate, it like I said, it just tells you what a game changer that is. And then it looks like behind the scenes, the Federation was actually trying to go one step beyond cloak technology, yeah?
Phasing technology, yeah, which is interesting because we see the Romulans do this, you know, Romulans Next Generation, you know, we're in that wheelhouse now. And the episode The Next Phase, the Romulans are trying to do the same thing we found out the Federation is doing in the Pegasus, or had done in the past with Captain Pressman at that time, and then Riker when he was, I believe, an ensign on the Pegasus. Shady stuff, and you know, and again, a lot of this is it's non-canon, right? I know you love the term canon when it comes to Star Trek, but you know, I believe that there has either been, if there hasn't been true fiction, there's been fan fiction about this, I'm sure. But you know, Pressman and the Pegasus all being like a Section 31 thing, because that's straight up Section 31 procedure there, you know, to have this experiment gone wrong, plausible deniability, you know. And that was the whole thing in the Enterprise incident. That's why Kirk was the only one who knew about it, Kirk and Spock. So it would be plausible deniability if things went wrong. And things clearly went wrong on the Pegasus because, you know, it gets trapped in an asteroid and stuck there for several years, you know.
Right.
And, you know, to me, though, I mean, we're talking about this, delving into this stuff. It's just so odd to me that, okay, why do we need to agree that we can't use cloaking devices? Again, I believe Gene Roddenberry, to paraphrase, said, "We're the good guys. We don't sneak around," which is such a, like, look, I admire your optimism, but it's very naive, you know, because if you think back, of course, the military procedure, if you think back to the original, because we're talking about, you know, where all Star Trek Origins, right, where this came from. Mm-hmm. And the original series is a powerful technology. Starfleet recognizes that and goes to steal it.
Right.
As you should, right? And then look at Star Trek III, the Klingons find out about Genesis, a powerful technology, like, oh, we need to find out what this is. So it's the same kind of mentality, and the governments and organizations would do. And then, you know, and then here we get to Next Generation era, and we found that we just signed off our rights to not cloak for what? Like, what's gonna happen if we use cloaking devices? What, the Romulans are gonna attack us? well, then at least we'll be on equal footing because we both have cloaking devices. Now they could attack you anyway. you're not up to speed with the technology. So I'm with you, man. It is a strange thing to wrap your mind around. And, like, I get they don't want everybody cloaking left and right. And although during the time of the motion picture, apparently they thought it was okay if they have that in the schematics there. But I don't know. It's weird because the Klingons clearly have it, and the Klingons are our ally, and we didn't make them sign a treaty to say you're not going to cloak. You know, so what gives, Starfleet?
Yeah, maybe that was a leverage they were thinking about, is if they were allied with the Klingons and the Klingons can do it, that was enough of a detraction for the Romulans to do it, but not to do it, excuse me, or to use that technology against them. But again, none of it really makes much sense to me. And I think you made an excellent point when you spoke about the Klingons running in to get Genesis, because it was a game changer. Again, it's all about balance of power, right? And you don't want, if even in today's world, if you've got too much power, then people want to take it away from you, right? Or they look at you as some kind of bully. You want to keep things as even as possible so that if you try something, you know that the results are not going to be pretty for either side. And I think that's the whole point. And I think that's, Star Trek does so many things right, when you think about it. It's such a wonderful show. It's a wonderful philosophy. And I love it to death, because here we are doing a podcast on Star Trek. But I just thought that this is, if there was one area that I just thought was a little ridiculous and not well thought out anyway, was this whole thing with the cloak. Now, if you use cloak technology all the time, it's not going to be a lot of fun for the viewers, right?
Where's the ship?
Where's the ship?
They would save so much money.
They would have saved a lot of money.
Well, yeah, it's like in Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, where or Beal has a invisible ship, that they don't really refer to it as a cloaking device or anything, but they just say, his ship is invisible. It's like, okay, what does that mean? But it's just so we didn't have to see another ship, and whatever, yeah. Right?
right. But at any rate, so, I mean, it gets a little iffy, but then a game changer, right? Are you prepared to move into another realm of Star Trek?
Well, let's do it.
All right, here we are now in Deep Space Nine, and this one's a little creepier because it's a lot more military in here. The use and the adoption of the cloaking device dramatically changes because circumstances have dramatically changed, yeah? This is Deep Space Nine and the use of the USS Defiant, which was created as a weapon against the Borg, has a cloaking device, right? And it has a cloaking device at first with a Romulan.
Yeah, well, for two episodes, they have a Romulan supervisor, and then they decide, we have enough characters, so forget it.
Yeah, well, because they can't technically use a cloak in the Alpha Quadrant. You can only cloak if you're in the other quadrant.
Which they break so quickly, I think.
Well, just that alone, if the ship was designed to destroy the Borg, I don't think they were going to the Gamma Quadrant to destroy the Borg, right?
I don't think they necessarily designed the ship with the cloaking device in mind. If it was an anti-Borg weapon, you don't need to, sneaking up on the Borg is not going to help you, right? As soon as you show up, doesn't matter. I feel like they added the cloaking device, as they were getting it ready to go to the Gamma Quadrant to fight the Dominion, to get reconnaissance, but I don't know. I have to look at the blueprints. I have to look at the blueprints to see.
Yeah, so. I never. Well, at least they never said that it was added on for the Gamma Quadrant.
They never said it either way.
Yeah, but
I mean, I guess
that's
just the way I assumed it. But I see your thinking there, Ken. If they designed a cloaking device to go attack the Borg, then that was a while ago, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, by the time when did it show up? The end of season three, season four.
Beginning of season three, Deep Space Nine. Cisco had designed it, back when he was working on Earth on spaceship designs, after Rule 359 and before he got assigned to Deep Space Nine. So this has been in the works for a long time. So,
relatively, 2 or 3 years isn't that long a time, but I hear what you're saying. I think that the point is that if you're going after the all powerful weapon, the Borg, you're going to use every advantage. And the Borg, as soon as they detect you, they change course and come after you, right? So if you can sneak up on them at any time to get that tactical advantage, well, then that's a huge game changer. That's why I assumed that cloaking device would be a great weapon for these little ships, because if you had, dozens and dozens of these Defiant-type ships just coming after you, And you don't know which way is up. That's pretty cool. Now, again, it can't shoot while cloaked either. That's another weakness. But that could have been another big a big part of it anyway.
Yeah, the thing with the Defiant and the cloaking device is very interesting because it's obviously the first time we've ever seen. Well, I guess it's the second time because you know, the Enterprise did use it in the Enterprise incident. But outside of that, it's the first time we've seen on a regular basis a Starfleet vessel use the cloaking device. And you know, it's cool that they it's completely unnecessary, but it's cool. Like they turn all the lights down when the cloaking device is on. You know, mm-hmm. It's just a cool visual cue there. It's cool because Deep Space Nine, obviously, a lot of things. The status quo changes a lot on Deep Space Nine. You know, we have the Klingon alliance falls apart. So actually, you know, the Defiant, they use the Defiant and the cloaking device to go, you know, in Way of the Warrior to go save Cardassians, and we see them, you know, breaking the rules, and nobody comes and takes the cloaking device away from them, do they? So I guess it was okay.
Oh no.
But see, that's the danger, though, Ken. I mean, to get back to our problem with the Federation not using cloaking technology is, you said, oh well, you know, they're allies with the Klingon, so they figured that was enough. And Picard uses that to his advantage in the Next Generation several times. I mean, he gets a cloaked ship to go to Romulus and Unification. He brings extra Klingon ships with him when he goes into the neutral zone, I believe, in the Defector.
Defectors, right? Yep.
So he's using the Klingons as his allies to his advantage. But fast forward to middle of Deep Space Nine, the Klingons aren't your ally anymore. Right, so you have no friends with cloaking devices. All the people with cloaking devices are your enemies. So it's a good thing they got that. Good thing they got that worked out with the Defiant. And it's weird. You think at the time of war too, like all out war, right? I mean, this is the biggest war we've seen the Federation fight. You think they would like do something to say, you know what? Let's just give everybody a cloaking device now, and then we'll see what happens, right? I mean, what's the worst that could happen, right? The Romans aren't going to attack you because you started to use cloaking devices. You would think, right? Because it's their common enemies, the Dominion. So why would they? I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
I do. That's why I was going with this. I think that in Deep Space Nine, that's why it's probably one of it's my favorite series outside of TOS and the TOS movies, because of that. Because you know, I think eventually some of these writers came together and said, you know what, this is kind of weird. You know, we need to get this right. You need to have the balance of power be matched. If you're going to disrupt that balance of power by going to war with the Klingons and then with the Dominion, which was brilliant in its strategy, then you have to have technologies that's up to speed, right? Because if you don't, you're going to lose. And that element of surprise is, I'm telling you, that is the biggest game changer, right? Why do you think special forces operate at night? So they can't be seen. I mean, it's really, you know, why do SEAL teams dive, you know, from parachutes 6 miles out to sea and then come in by water, you know, because you can't be seen. Well, it's the same thing. This technology allows you to creep up on your enemy and you know, do the things you need to do in order to ensure success for your side. Yeah, it's kind of ironic too that the Dominion, right? I don't remember if their ships cloaked, but their soldiers did.
I was just thinking about that when you're talking about special forces, because it's odd that the Dominion doesn't have cloaking devices for their ships, because the Jem'Hadar have a personalized cloaking technology, you know. And it's funny, you know, doing From There to Here recently. I was talking about A Blaze of Glory with Lee Hutchinson, and there's a scene where, you know, Sisko and Edgerton go to the Maquis base. Sisko shoots like into an empty space because he predicts that some Jem'Hadar are there, and he shoots them, and they are there, and they fall down. They had been cloaked, and Edgerton says, "Oh, I forgot they could do that." I'm like, you know what, I did too. You know, because when you first see him, it's like, oh my, that's so cool. You know, and they get away from that as time goes on, because they don't need to be stealthy, because at that point it's like all out war. But it's a cool thing that I'm sure. The military is hard at work. Somebody in some secret lab right now is hard at work trying to get some like invisibility suit or something. I mean, there's so many sci-fi. I mean, we talk about there's not a lot of space-based science fiction that have starships have cloaking devices, but there, if you look around at every science fiction, you know, any kind of science fiction, there's always some story about somebody tried to like make themselves invisible or invent a cloaking suit of some kind, or there's invisibility cloaks or whatever you want in fantasy world. So personalized cloaking technology is an even greater tactical advantage, depending on what your mission is, but an even greater tactical advantage than a ship being cloaked. Because if a person can get in and out undetected, I mean, that's huge, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think about it throughout history, before, you know, the ones that adapted to and were able, the U.S. fleet had radar before the Japanese, and the fleet was, you know, demolished, and that was a huge advantage, right, to know where they were. They didn't know how to use it as well, but as time went on, just the ability to use radar to find your enemy and know where they were before you knew they were there, it's incredible. So that's why I guess maybe I look at it through that lens all the time is, why would you set up your society so that you have to survive based on the charities of your enemy? Who's gonna be charitable? It's just a timing game, right? Especially if everything they do has been kind of out there that they want to grow, they want to expand, just like any other kind of evil empire, you're making a deal with the devil. That makes no sense. It just makes no sense. And so that's why I come down on that, and that's why I think with Deep Space Nine they finally turn it all around and they get it right. But it was quite a journey if you think about it from first initially seeing this thing in Balance of Terror. This whole idea was outstanding, to the Enterprise incident and stealing it so that they could have it, and then how it became such a game changer in Star Trek III. I mean, the cloaking device essentially destroyed the Enterprise, right? In a sense, it was decloaked and it got hurt, but that ship was powerful enough to shoot up and blow up the Enterprise. As Kirk said, that little ship cost us a lot, right? And then in Star Trek IV, it was used for good. And then in Star Trek VI, wow, it really went into a whole new direction. And then TNG is where it just keeps getting cloudier and cloudier. You know, Romulans and Klingons can use it, but we can't.
Well, even in the future in TNG and All Good Things, and I know that's an alternate future, but, you know, the Enterprise D, the Enterprise D 2.0 or whatever you want to call it, right, has a cloaking device, you know, and that, I think right, that's really cool. Look, I feel like in fandom it seems like feelings are mixed on the Enterprise D from All Good Things. I think it's awesome. I think it's like the ultimate fanboy version of the Enterprise D. It has three nacelles, huge laser cannon, or laser cannon, excuse me, wrong franchise, phaser cannon, the antenna, it can cloak and go up to like warp 13. I mean, that's awesome. Who knows what the geopoliticals of, actually, that didn't even apply in space, but the galactical political situation is in the future of All Good Things to allow Federation to have a cloaking device. Because if the Romulans have been conquered by the Klingons, they're not a power. And if we're enemies with the Klingons, we're probably like, you know what? Let's go ahead and use the cloaking device now, because what do we have to lose, right? So that's probably where they got to in that future. I mean, you can only extrapolate so much from the limited amount we saw, but that just was really cool to see that in the Enterprise D. And then going into Deep Space Nine, let's talk about this for a second. Don't forget there are cloaked mines, you know, I mean, the minefield that the Defiant deploys in front of the wormhole to keep the Dominion out. I mean, that's huge. And that's something the Klingons had been doing earlier as well, because back when the Klingons and the Federation were fighting, the Klingons were mining Bajoran space with mines, and, you know, they had a few accidents, and that's how Federation found out about it. I guess, you know, we have similar technology today to quote unquote cloaked mines, do we not?
I don't know about cloak them.
I mean, not that they're like physically invisible, but like, you know, not detectable by certain scans. I mean, I don't know, do we? I mean, it seems like something that we would have some kind of technology that are hidden, that hides mines and things like that.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, not to get too technical, but when you're talking about things that are submerged, if you're listening for sound, mines don't make any sounds, right? If you were to use active sonar and ping, yeah, you could detect mines underwater. You could detect, because it gives you a picture of what's out there. However, the second you do that, like I said, the bad guys now know where you are, right? So that's what makes mines so deadly is, you know, they're just under the surface enough. And if there's any other surface noise going, yeah, that's, you know, even in the Gulf War, or, you know, back when we were protecting Kuwaiti ships and all that stuff, plenty of mines were hit because they're just devastating.
You hear about all these like old mines that people didn't realize they were there that blow up and like hurt civilians and stuff. And you got to think they went over this with a metal detector or something and just nobody found it. So even when you have the technology to find things, sometimes things slip through.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely they are. So I think you make a good point. I think that hits the point totally. Why? First of all, let's just say this. The technology in Star Trek, like the idea of this premise, was brilliant. It really was. Its execution was choppy from series to series, but the technology itself was a wonderful idea. I think it added so much intrigue, and it allowed for a lot of stories that couldn't be told before to be told. And I guess to your point, and save some money from time to time with it, yeah?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because when you don't have a ship to see, you don't have to show it. And I'm glad that they kept the Romulans and then the Klingons. Again, based off that whole fact that they lost the Bird of Prey model and they had to have some kind of alliance to explain why they were using Romulan and Klingon ships, that's why Klingons, or, you know, we can look at it that way. I choose to. That's why Klingons got cloaking devices, and that's why they're the only two races that have true cloaking devices, because it just proves that this is a very, very sophisticated, unique technology that not everybody can just invent, right? Everybody invented warp drive of their own capacity. Everybody has a phaser of some kind, right? But not everybody has a cloaking device. So that just shows you how complicated and unique a technology it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the coolest, man. That's why when we were talking about what we were going to talk about, we said, oh, the cloaking device. What a great premise, right? And it's not only is it part of Star Trek Origins, fairly confident it's Star Trek original, I think.
Right. Well, we'll have to go back through the Flash Gordon archives and you know, things like that and see. But yeah, I think it's definitely the first time in popular culture that people knew what it was. I mean, you know, Lord of the Rings had, you know, invisibility things going on, and, you know, wizards and all that. But we're talking about technology. We're talking about, like, science fiction, not some kind of spell or magic ring, you know, that makes you invisible. We're talking about something that you can, like, plug into your ship and fly around undetected. And that's Star Trek, man. So Star Trek Origins.
Well, it is. It is Star Trek. And it's another one of those technology things that they came up with the 60s that became a reality 20, 30 years later, right? I mean, with the B-2 bomber, right? The stealth bomber and the stealth fighter and all these things. I mean, it's, even if you look at warships today, they're angular, they're changed differently, they have a different profile so that they can essentially be cloaked. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely, Ken. Now, before we go today, I do want to mention we still have our iTunes giveaway contest going. If you leave us a review on iTunes between now and November 17th, you have a chance to win a copy of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1 on Blu-ray, so please be sure to do that. But cloaking devices and iTunes giveaways aren't the only thing we're talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So going to Destination Star Trek and being able to see the crew, you know, some of the crew, some of the major, you know, still living members of the 60s original series crew, well, it's a bit of a bucket list moment for me.
Saturday Morning Trek.
And all these things just brought in more and more people who thought they were alone, and they found each other, and they made their clubs, and then they made conventions, and that's what the 70s were about, was getting Star Trek back and finding each other.
Melodic Treks.
Imagine that scene without that music. That music is so poignant and so beautiful. And they had played it earlier in the episode, and it wasn't sad when they played it earlier. It was romantic. It was happy. It was freeing.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So you can find us on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can always stream or download the MP3 file from our website at Trek.fm and grab the RSS link as well. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscription button. That makes it easier for our listeners to find the show when they search for iTunes. And we love new listeners, so please, please, please subscribe directly to Standard Orbit as well as the Trek FM Master Feed and help us increase our visibility for new listeners. Also, we would ask you to help us out with Patreon. Well, what is Patreon? Well, Patreon is the method that we use to fund the network. So I would encourage you all, if you can afford it, to go on to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/trekfm, and become a patron. And for as little as $15 a month, you can join Trek FM's Patron Roundtable, which is wonderful. I mean, this is how I found my way onto the network. And who knows what could happen to you, right? You might find your way. And then if you're kind enough to donate $25 per month or more, you get associate producer credit for the shows of your choice. And that's a big deal. And speaking of that, we would like to say thank you always to our associate producers for this show, for Standard Orbit, Renee Roberts, Richard Rutledge, and Aaron Harvey.
Thanks so much for all of your support for both Standard Orbit and for Trek FM through Patreon. You can find Renee on Twitter at mres_1701. Richard, you can find at RUT8972. And you can find our buddy Aaron Harvey at GeekFilter, all on Twitter. So look them up, follow them, and thank you again.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trek.fm/contact and look into the sidebar on the show page. Or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. And please leave us a voice message that we can play here on the show. You can hear your own voice on the podcast. Pretty fun. So feel free to do that. And you can also contact us through Twitter at TrekFM or through Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM and the Babel Conference. To find us at the Babel Conference, type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. Babel Conference is a great way for you to connect with fellow listeners and the hosts of the network. So as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MoreOnZach. And I'm also the host of my own podcast called Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that young Superman TV show. And we're on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. What about you, Ken?
So you can find me as well on the Babel Conference. That's where I like to hang out. It's my favorite spot on Facebook, to be honest with you. It's the safest, funnest, most respectful spot to talk Star Trek on the entire interweb. So look for me there, and feel free to also look for me on Facebook at any time, and feel free to IM me with questions or if you just want to hook up and be friends. Or you can get information from me via Twitter. Yes, I am on Twitter now, at BostonSCPO. That's Boston Senior Chief Petty Officer, SCPO. And I look forward to communicating with you in between these shows, and especially when they drop. That's when it's a lot of fun. So we'll talk to you soon.
So thanks, everyone, again for listening. And join us next time here on Trek.fm for another episode of Standard Orbit.